You're listening to Stories That Matter, a Hawkwood podcast. Kate Raworth is the renegade economist behind Donut Economics, exploring the economic mindset needed to address the 21st century's social and ecological challenges. Kate ran a workshop at Hawkwood in July 2019, and some of the participants on the day were team members from Lush. They interviewed Kate after the workshop.
My name's Kate Raworth. I am a renegade economist because I studied economics at university thinking it would give me the tools to help change the world. And I was so frustrated and disappointed by what I was taught that I walked away. I never wanted to be introduced as an economist. I thought that was an embarrassing thing. I spent 20 years working for the United Nations, for Oxfam, in the villages of Zanzibar, realizing that the issues that I cared most about, like ecological breakdown, like social justice, like the unpaid caring work of women, these were pushed to the margins of mainstream economics, and I wanted to help bring them back centre. So I set out to write a book. It's called Donut Economics, 7 Ways to Think Like a 21st Century Economist. And it puts forward a vision of an economy that actually makes sense if you put people and the living planet at the heart of your vision. So that's what I do. And now I've been presenting this book for 2 years. I'm thrilled by the traction it's had in the world. And I'm working on setting up an organisation which will turn the book's ideas into practice. I was working at Oxfam in 2012 and I drew a picture which, crazy though it sounds, has come to be known as the donut. It's a compass for 21st century prosperity for humanity. And when we published this, it's just a discussion paper. It was extraordinary, the traction it had in the world. It got picked up internationally very quickly and people started saying, oh, you're the donut lady. And I thought, what have I done? But I was really amazed by the traction of this visual idea and how it was stimulating new conversations. It was giving people courage to ask different kinds of questions, to challenge mainstream economic thinking. And so I wanted to take it further than being just a discussion paper and a picture that was going around social media. And I wanted to use it as a launching pad for rewriting new economics. So I left a wonderful job at Oxfam in order to write a book because I thought that was the best piece of advocacy that I could do at that point, to actually bring together the ideas from all sorts of different strands of economics and make them dance on the same page and show that there's another way of looking at the economy that makes a lot more sense for the 21st century. So the donut diagram, think of it as a donut with a hole in the middle. And it's, so it's a shape. You don't have to eat them. In fact, don't eat them. They're not good for us, right? This is just the one donut that actually turns out to be any good for us. And it's conceptual. And it's like a comfort. It's like a compass for 21st century prosperity. So think of that donut with a hole in the middle. And imagine humanity's use of Earth's resources radiating out from the center of that picture. So the hole in the middle is a place where people are left falling short on the essentials of life. It's where people can't meet their needs for food, water, education, housing, energy, a job. And we want to leave nobody in the world in that hole. In fact, all the world's governments have agreed that every person in the world has a right to meeting these essential needs. We call them the Sustainable Development Goals. So it's a globally agreed agenda. Leave nobody in the hole in the middle of the donut. Every person needs enough resources to meet their needs. But, and it's a big but, collectively as humanity, we need to make sure that we don't use so much of Earth's resources that we overshoot the outside edge of that donut, which I call the ecological ceiling. It's the place where if we use Earth's resources beyond that point, we begin to put so much pressure on Earth's life-supporting systems that we begin to push them out of balance. So we cause climate breakdown. We acidify the oceans. We create a hole in the ozone layer and catastrophic levels of biodiversity loss. Earth system scientists call these the 9 planetary boundaries, the life-supporting systems that keep Earth the home sweet home that she's been for humanity for the last 11,000 years. This beautiful planet with a stable climate and fertile soils and a protective ozone layer overhead and bountiful biodiversity and abundant fresh water. We are at grave risk of tipping ourselves out of that stable balance. So put those two ideas together. And the donut says, we need to meet the needs of all people, but do it within the means of the living planet. And so it's about finding a balance, an innovative balance that we've never found before that does both of those at the same time. How on earth did we let it come to this point that we are so pushing on the planet's life-supporting systems that we know we are literally risking catastrophic breakdown? I lay the blame at the feet of economics. Because anybody around the world, if I ask them, what's the first diagram you remember studying economics? It's supply and demand. Economic theory starts with the market. Welcome to economics, let's talk about the market. And that puts price at the center of our vision. And it leaves at the margins things that aren't priced. And economists say, don't worry, we have a concept for that. Externalities. Those things, those values, good or bad, that fall outside of market contracts. Now, when that means I want to talk about climate breakdown, I want to talk about acid rain, I want to talk about the death of coral reefs, I want to talk about the breakdown of the living world, economists will say, yes, those are environmental externalities. To me, this sets off huge alarm bells. If in these early days of the 21st century, when we know we're literally risking destroying the life-supporting systems of humanity and all living beings, and economists want to carry on calling them environmental externalities, that tells us this model of economics is completely wrong, because it's so focused on growth. GDP, gross domestic product, which is just the financial value of goods and services sold in an economy in a year. It was a number invented in the 1930s, so almost 100 years ago. Its very inventor, a man called Simon Kuznets, brilliant economist, he was asked by US government to come up with one number to measure the output of the US economy. He did. He also gave a caveat. He said this could scarcely be used to measure the welfare of a nation because it doesn't talk about the unpaid caring work of parents, doesn't talk about the value created in the community, and it just talks about the flow of financial value. It doesn't talk about what you might be losing in the process of generating it. But politicians got obsessed with this number. It became a horse race between the US and the USSR. Countries were proud of the rate of growth. So we got addicted to GDP growth, and it became like a proxy of success. If the economy is growing, things must be going well. But we know too much now. We know that growth has come along with environmental breakdown, with ecological destruction, with deforestation, with ocean acidification, with the loss of coral reefs, with massive fossil fuel pollution. So we need a new, far more nuanced way of assessing what progress looks like. The shape of progress has changed. It's no longer an ever-rising line, up, 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 exponentially increasing. That's growth. It's balance. Health lies in balance. We know that in our bodies. Have enough food, but not too much. Have enough water, exercise, oxygen, but not too much. And we need to move from understanding that at the level of our own bodies to the level of the planet. Bodily health, planetary health. It lies in balance. And I think that's a real opportunity, actually, because we deeply understand the meaning of health and balance in our own bodies. We have a real chance of coming to understand it at the level of the planet. But we need to debunk the old economics that told us progress and success lies in endless growth. It doesn't. In our own bodies, we would call that cancer. In our economies, we seem to call it success. And we need to move past that because it's clearly destroying the systems on which we depend. So I'm fixed on thinking, how can we transform the mindset that is still being taught in universities worldwide? The one I was taught and is still being taught students today. It's being practiced in boardrooms and in parliaments internationally. How can we move from that to something that actually serves us? Well, I believe in the power of the pencil. I think pictures are incredibly powerful. Did you know that over half of the nerve fibers in our brains are linked to our eyesight? So our eyes are pattern seekers, and we make sense of the world visually. And the images we see, they go into the back of our brains and sit in your visual cortex right at the back of your head. And they stay there for decades without us knowing that they're there or not. So when economics starts with supply and demand, it puts the market at the center of our vision, and things outside the market are called externalities. I think of that as intellectual graffiti. And graffiti is very, very hard to scrub out. So rather than scrubbing it out, I want to paint over it. And that's why I start a new mindset with a new picture. And that's the donut that talks first, not about money and markets. It talks about human well-being and ecological well-being. These are the central values, and they are not an ever-rising line of growth. They're a circle of balance. Start with images, because it's amazing what we can tap into and unleash in our minds if we start with a new picture. And then find new words as well. I like talking about regenerative economics. economies that work with and within the cycles of the living world, where things are never used up, they're used again and again, that waste from one process becomes food for the next. And those resources will be used far more carefully and more lovingly and more collectively. And we need to describe these new dynamics and point them out and find ways of making them visible in art, in theatre, in poetry, in photography, because we need to see these new pictures so that when these patterns start to emerge in our economies, we think, oh, I know that. I recognise that. That's a regenerative dynamic. We need distributive economies where value that's created is shared far more equitably with all who co-create it, instead of centralising ones that draw and extract value and concentrate it in the hands of a 1%. We need to see art and dance and poetry that demonstrates what distributive design looks like. Have you ever seen a murmuration of starlings against the night sky and these birds fly together like a whole system? I think of them making these new patterns visible in the sky. We need to see these things so that when they start showing up our economies, we think, oh, I recognize that pattern. It's distributive. It's regenerative. So for me, that's where a new mindset begins. It doesn't begin with an equation. It doesn't even begin with an argument or a policy. It begins by making something irresistible and visible. What excites me every day is the number of people I meet wherever I go, whichever country I'm in. There are people putting this new way of practicing economics into practice. There are people setting up cooperatives and collectively owned enterprises that are designed and purposed to sequester carbon dioxide and create health in the community and restore connection. And their very purpose, they sometimes say to me, you know, the donut diagram, it's like, that's our business logo. That's why we exist. So I have huge faith and excitement about the fact that this new economy is popping up. It's everywhere. It needs to be made visible. It needs to be connected. The challenge to it, of course, is that the old economy doesn't want to let go. The old economy that's designed on extracting financial value and capturing it and making sure that business regulations stay in place so that it can carry on doing that. The old economy that doesn't want to recognize climate crisis, that doesn't want to transform the way we produce and use and throw away plastics, that doesn't want to transform how land and housing is owned. And so the vested interests that are there will try and undermine or ignore or block new creations. And it's so important that people in the new economic space get together, get networked, work with each other, support each other, reinforce each other's values in the tough times and remind each other why they're standing in that space and holding those values. And then start building a critical mass and making it visible. Because I don't think politicians are going to be the ones who step forward first and represent these new economic ideas. It's going to be citizens, businesses, communities that start to show that it's already happening. And by building a critical mass of people who already support those ideas, you make a space that politicians can then step into because they know there's a constituency there to represent. So for me, change starts in the conviction of individuals, whether it's parents or CEOs or entrepreneurs, or the latest employee, or somebody working in the local city council, or an MP, individuals who say, I'm going to start making this happen here. And it starts popping up and becoming visible everywhere. That to me, and to make those ideas irresistible, because they are once you see them in practice, to make that happen, that to me is how we have the best chance of overcoming the vested interest that doesn't want to let go. Sometimes these changes that we need to see happening in the economy seem so systemic that people can think, well, what could I do? But I like to think that we're all economists because we're all actors in the economy. And if we think of the economy as an evolving system, then what each one of us does changes it. You know, the people doing the wacky, crazy, new collective platform cooperation at the fringes of the economy. People think, what on earth are they doing? That's where the economy is evolving. Evolution happens at the front edge. So the actions of each of us can transform how the whole behaves. So each one of us can ask ourselves, how do I eat? I need to move from eating meats to eating mostly plants. How do I travel? Take the train, not the plane, wherever you can. How do I bank? Which bank do you give the privilege of holding and investing your savings? Move your money to a bank who shares your values. How do I power my home? Move your electricity contract to a company that actually generates its own renewable energy and is committed to transforming the entire network of supply to renewable energy? How do I invest and how do I divest and how do I protest and how do I volunteer and how do I vote and how do I be political between elections, because that's when politics really happens? How do I join movements and how do I use the networks that I'm part of? Because every one of us has influence in the networks we're part of. A 17-year-old girl can reach other 17-year-old girls in a way that nobody else can. So whether you're the newest employee or the oldest CEO or the student at the back of the class or the latest teacher, all of us can start doing this differently.
Thanks for listening to Stories That Matter, a Hawkwood podcast, and thanks to Lush for this interview. You can find more audio content by Lush wherever you get your podcasts or via the free Lush Player app. Be sure to subscribe to Stories That Matter to hear our next episode, which will be with Helen Browning, Chief Executive of the Soil Association. This episode was produced by Elise McKenna and Laura Bing, with music by Daisy Burt playing an original composition, Berta.